I'm Frank Vaughn. It's December 9th, 2025, and we're going to jump right in today with something totally absurd. The headline is awkward. FIFA Pride Match will feature two countries that ban homosexuality. I posted this on X late last night. This is actually happening. One nation that will literally kill your rainbow backside, Iran, with the other nation being nearly as bad playing the Pride Match, the world has become a tragicomic parody for the weak and unreal to demand be taken seriously. You couldn't make this up. So FIFA is having these exhibition matches. And actually, it says in the subtext, you can't make this stuff up if you try. The 2026 World Cup has been the talk of the sports and political world lately. The United States, Mexico, and Canada will host it. And last week, the amazing thing is that Canada isn't doing the gay match because we are among the gayest countries, both the literal meaning and the sarcastic meaning in the history of the world. The presidents of all three countries, we don't have a president, but nobody cares. Nobody cares to get it right. Countries attended and participated in the draw to determine which teams would play in which groups. In the United States, Seattle was one of the host cities, and one of the matches in that city will take place on June 26th before the draw. Local organizers there determined that the theme for that particular night would be the LGBTQ, etc. Pride Night to coincide with June being Pride Month. Why? Because Seattle's going to Seattle and insert propaganda into sports, no matter how much it alienates people. So now that everything's finalized and settled, we know who will be playing that match. Egypt and Iran. No, I'm serious. This goes right along with gays for Palestine or bisexuals for Palestine or transgenders for Palestine. Very confused people. And it reminds me as well of Carney saying Muslim values are Canadian values right before he jetted off to attend a pride parade. You can't suck and blow at the same time, no pun intended. You have to kind of choose your side. You're either this egalitarian, hippie, libertine society, or you're a very restrictive one. And I think the way that things are going, Canada, with its mass immigration, with its importation of other cultures that have more normalized family structures, it's inevitable who's going to suffer because of these wide open policies of the Canadian government. Eventually, the entire movement, this progressive DEI shtick, which we've all been living under, will disappear because demographics is destiny. All right, we're going to bounce around and have a bit of fun today. This is TD's Galley says, silver squeeze is done, platinum pump next. Silver's going to dump to $40 an ounce, according to TD. TD, which was convicted and fined heavily for doing a bunch of dirty money laundering. And it's an interesting thing. I've been reading a lot of books lately about the roots of corruption in the United States and Canada and Europe. And I'll tell you, it goes back a long way and it always tends to involve the banks. But I find the timing of this really funny because today, right after TD said it's going down, silver's experiencing quite a bit of run. It's up $3 today. And I think I understand why. Russia to implement gold bar export ban by 2026. This is from yesterday, according to PA News. Russian Deputy Prime Minister Alexander Novak announced that restrictions on the export of gold bars from Russia will take effect in 2026. During a meeting of the Strategic Development and National Projects Committee, Novak stated that the measures will be taken to prevent uncontrolled export of cash rubles from unknown sources within Russia, blah, 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 blah. What this is really all about, timing is very significant here, because China, this is back in November, China's gold and silver markets brace for new era amid sweeping policy changes. China's financial markets were jolted on Monday, November 3rd, following the sudden announcement of significant tax and export rule changes affecting gold and silver. I've talked about on this channel how the decision to seize Russian cash assets and Russian assets in general that were held in European nations, as well as to vengefully kick them out of the SWIFT system because the Europeans and the Europeans under Biden. So I would say the Biden administration represented the World Economic Forum's interests in the United States. So I call him a European leader. He wasn't really an American leader. Decided to vengefully kick them out of the SWIFT system, which weaponized the US dollar. And it was a big mistake because it wasn't just Russia that took note. The rest of the world took note. And it accelerated plans by the BRICS nations to create a new international settlement layer. And there's a lot of features to this, but this is about the dethroning of the US dollar, because the US dollar cannot be allowed to be used as a bludgeon to club other nations, especially powerful nations, when Trump himself, the president of the United States, not only is saying that it might be advantageous to the United States to not have reserve currency status, but Trump has also described the world order that's coming into existence as a G2 order centered around China and the United States, an acknowledgement of the coming multipolar reality. This is another step in that process. And this is a big concern for Canada, because Canada is way behind the eight ball, because Canada doesn't have any gold. We don't have any silver. We're not buying. We're not stockpiling. We have a lot of it in the ground, but foreign governments and foreign companies dominate where that metal is sent when it gets pulled out of the ground. 70% of it goes to China, who's hoarding it, and they're hoarding it at rates that they are not publicly disclosing. That gold is not going to come back, as Canada has been fully converted into a resource colony, backed up by nothing but fiat currency, and our currency will be one of the worst affected during this debasement crisis. And people ask, "How? What about my pensions, and what about all my social services?" You can say goodbye as this process unfolds, and I'm sorry to deliver that news. You might want to prepare ahead of time, trying to warn you. Get into real physical assets. I'm not telling you which ones, but I'm telling you fiat isn't where it's at. Fiat currencies, over the course of history, have a very limited lifespan. The U.S. dollar and the basket of fiat that is tied to the U.S. dollar have had a really good run. But that run is coming to an end, and it's coming to an end because of self-inflicted wounds. I just want to show you. I talked on the channel about Mark Carney's trips to Asia as he tries to replace the U.S. market with Asia. And some people have said that he's very smart because he's trying to align Canada with the BRICS nations. Canada being under the thumb and dependent on Asia for its existence is not very good for us at all. In fact, it poses an existential crisis because the United States, if it intends to be one of the G2, cannot afford to let us fall completely into the Asian sphere. And even if we did build some kind of mythical pipeline, which is never going to happen, Mark Carney, the ink was barely dry in the MOU. Then he was running around the country talking to his base, his hypnotized NPC base, and basically recanting the entire thing. There will be no pipeline. So all the environmental activists, you don't have to worry. You won, and Danielle Smith really handed Mark Carney the victory. At the same time as, and I've had a real hard time getting over this, the realization that Scott Moe and the realization that Danielle Smith are not going to put provincial interests first. They're both messaging that Carney's a different beast, even though he is exactly the same and in some ways worse than his predecessor. And that's all going to come out in the wash. But it's a shame that we don't have the backing of the popularly elected leaders. But I digress. I talked about Singapore, and I made some jokes in a recent video, and it was a few weeks ago where Mark Carney was promoting this deal he made with Singapore. Singapore is a powerhouse. They're not a powerhouse for us. They're a powerhouse for themselves and for Asia. They have a really strong military that is designed essentially to do maximum harm to anybody who tries to harm the free city. They're a powerhouse in their own right. And I just want to show you what they're building.
Demand for gold is surging, recently sending prices past $4,000 per troy ounce for the first time. In times of uncertainty, investors reach for gold. But this time, it's not just about buying more of it. The wealthy are rethinking where they stash their treasure. Away from traditional vaults in London and Geneva, and east to new hubs like Singapore. That brings us here, inside some of the most secure private vaults in the world.
Now, I misspoke. It's not building. It's about what's built already and continuing to develop. The Wall Street Journal, who is the author of this report, which has been viewed by less than a million people worldwide, which I find kind of crazy, very important news. It's not even news. This is old news. But it's coming to your attention today, because it's going to have ramifications that reverberate throughout the decades ahead, probably for the rest of my life. What she said was the center of gold and silver storage, moving away from London and Geneva and moving to Asia. That is physical. You see, the London market and the COMEX in the United States, which handles these commodity exchanges of these precious metals, They have developed these vast, massive derivative futures markets, all to control price. For the last 50 years, it's been this huge price-fixing scheme. And the difference now is there's a huge industrial demand that is structural on the world for silver in particular, and it is draining physical stocks. And it is threatening that paper market. All your banks, TD Bank, which I just covered, saying that silver is going to head down in price, they have these massive short positions. Short means they're betting on the market going down. They have every reason to gaslight you about what's actually happening in the markets and what's going to happen over the next several years. The price of silver is destined to go up because it's the law of supply and demand. Put your charts away. Supply and demand speaks to it all. The thing that you need to understand most fundamentally is that there's all these promissory notes out there that are traded on top of physical silver. And every one of those promissory notes, these contracts, many of which, something like 100 some odd thousand are coming due in March. They come due every month. It's nothing new. The quantity in March, if even 5% of those contracts stand for delivery, and that means you have this piece of paper and it's a promise that you can have silver. And a lot of the time you just roll that paper over into the future. But you have the option of standing for delivery, which means you want your physical silver. And they're running on fumes. London doesn't have stock. The COMEX is drained trying to prop up London. The Asians aren't exporting anymore. You can see what's happening. Let's continue with the video.
This might look like just a warehouse, but it's a super sophisticated, highly securitized storage facility. Here at the Reserve, security isn't just set in concrete. It's built into the country itself.
Singapore really doesn't have enemies in the world. It makes it a very good long-term storage location.
For many wealthy clients, peace of mind matters just as much as profit. And geopolitical unrest, combined with global economic uncertainty, is one reason many are choosing to look eastward.
Singapore is a wealthy jurisdiction. They will not have an incentive to nationalize gold in the future. It is a jurisdiction which made such wealth through building confidence with clients. So for Singapore to nationalize something will be economic suicide, essentially. And certainly, Singapore is very well defended. And that combination of these three factors means that it's an ideal location to store wealth intergenerationally for 20, 30, 40-year timeframes.
First of all, it's called the Reserve. That's not an accidental name. It's telling you something. It is a very highly securitized facility in a very secure country, and we'll get to that next. But when you're listening to these things, you have to listen very carefully. Geopolitical uncertainty. There's a lot of meaning behind that word. This all goes back to Ukraine. It goes back to the war in Ukraine and what the Americans did to themselves and what they did to the world and what Europe has done to themselves by dedicating themselves to this war, not just kicking Russia out of the SWIFT system, but seizing their assets and then talking very publicly about where they're going to redistribute those assets to. This shook the foundations of the financial order and kicked into high gear the Asian nations, the rising powerhouses. Remember how demographics is destiny? What's the reason that Canada is flooding this nation with East Indians as though it can somehow fix our problems? The justification is primarily we stopped having babies. I'm not going to argue here that it's working because it's not. It's changing the fundamental foundational characteristics of this nation in a way that I'm not sure we can recover from. But setting that aside, we're drawing off the Nigerias of the world, the Indias of the world, that have demographics that are currently above replacement levels. But that party's running out. That time is running out, and it's not working for its stated objective. And setting that aside, you know, there's just one more thing I want to note. And that is the Singapore Armed Forces, active personnel 51,000, reserve personnel 252,000, paramilitaries, total mobilizable strength of 300,000 to 350,000 in 48 to 72 hours. This little tiny city has a greater mobilization capacity than all of Canada. Defense budget of $20 billion. Of course, they have their land army. We got these leopards. That's not what I want to focus on. I want to just talk about the Air Force. 13,500 personnel, 100 plus combat aircraft, 60 F-16s, 40 F-15 SGs, 20 F-35s. Canada doesn't have any. 12 delivered in 25, 8 more that are on order. They have this extensive Navy. And I'm actually, yes, I am letting Grok do this for me, because when it comes to these fixed facts, this is really good. Porcupine is the key word. Poisonous shrimp, dolphin, porcupine evolution. In short, tiny country, outsized high-tech force designed to make any aggression far more painful than any possible game. The reason I bring attention to this is exactly what Canada should have been doing for the last several decades. Canada has a population of 40 million now. 5-10 years ago, it was 38 million, 35 million. You can score it however you want. Everybody wants to argue about the total numbers. We could have built a defense infrastructure over the last 5 decades, which would have made invasion or any threats to this country so impossibly painful for any adversary, including the United States, that they would never think about it. The fact that the United States can openly joke about annexing this country and there's not a damn thing we can do about it is a testament to our defense doctrine and how failed it is. When a city can do this and understand they don't have the clout to conquer foreign lands, but they do have the clout to make it incredibly painful, so painful for any invading nation that they would never mess with Singapore. Canada could have been in the same boat. When I was in high school in the 1990s, I read a book called Exoneration. And there was a first book, and it was just this fictitious book that was we were made to read in high school about a military doctrine which actually successfully repelled an American invasion simply because we made it so painful. We actually allowed American planes to land as they tried to take our oil and tried to take our energy. We allowed their military use of our airfields. We signaled surrender, and then we blew up a bunch of their planes and held their entire Air Force hostage, and it ended the crisis. Now, I know it's fiction, but that could have been a fundamental basis for what we did. As it sits right now, we have been more consumed with painting rainbow sidewalks on our military bases. We don't even give our military adequate ammunition. We don't even give them adequate facilities to sleep in. They're under-equipped. We can't mobilize them. We have you look at the total military numbers and the actual amount that we can mobilize and the time that we can mobilize them for is abysmal. Anybody could walk in here and take us. The only reason no one does is because the United States exists. When we had somebody hijack a Cessna at the Vancouver airport, we depended on the Americans to scramble their jets to come and deal with it because ours were in Cold Lake and too far away. Anyway, I didn't mean to digress down that path, but to get back to the point, the reserve, where the gold and silver of Asia, much of it is going to be stored. It's not just there. It's in Shanghai. There's other cities that play a key role. They're building out the infrastructure to replace U.S. dollar dominance. It's happening in real time, and Canada is not prepared for it. I don't care how many times Carney is flying to Asia to conclude these trade deals, which are far more about Brookfield than they are about Canada. We are not ready. And the only thing that we can do, the only thing that makes any sense, is making common accord with the United States. And actually, they all talk about democracy. They all talk about protecting democracy and human rights and the tradition. These traditions, they pay lip service to it. But getting in bed with China isn't exactly doing that. The only game in town is the United States. The only game in town is Fortress North America. We're being outmaneuvered by the world, and we're wasting time by having this battle and this back and forth with the United States, which is only going to destroy our viability as a nation. It's happening in real time right now before your eyes. Canada and the Europeans are playing by the old rules. We're still acting like the old order has value in this coming world. Like I've said before, the main thesis that I've been trying to get across for several months now is the World Economic Forum and these organizations that are around it. The WEF is kind of like a touchstone, but there's all these other forces. Their time is over. And the people who have got the memo are the BRICS nations, are the Russians. Do you know the private ownership of gold and silver in Russia is greater than many European nations? Just private, not their own central bank holdings, let alone what's happening in China and India and the moves that the Saudi Arabians are making, playing both sides of the fence. There's a big change coming, and our political class, our leadership, who are addicted to the old order, haven't got the memo. And apparently, neither have our premiers. They're still playing by the old rules. We're not getting around to building something new, because you know who else understands this changing world? The Trump administration. You can have all the problems you want in the world. I'm sure over the course of this week, we're going to get into some things that the United States is doing that many people are going to have problems with. When I analyze the United States, I analyze them as to what their strategy is and what it is they're trying to do. And they're trying to reorganize the empire around North America. They're trying to scale it back. And they want a decent relationship with the Russians because they realize the future is going to be between the center of the world is not the Atlantic. The center of the world is the Pacific Ocean now and the nations that ring it. And the opportunity to prosper with or without conflict, I'm not sure how things are going to resolve around Taiwan and the saber-rattling that went on between Japan and China in the last couple of weeks. There are tensions. There are civilizational clashes that could build and could break out. Very real. And the one way that you can guarantee that those civilizational clashes will indeed break out is to align yourself with Europe and European thinking right now. When I say that, I'm not talking about the people. I'm talking about the political classes that want to keep the Ukraine war going indefinitely, even as Ukraine loses territory every single day. Zelensky, I'll probably cover this in the next video, but Zelensky just slammed the door on Trump's peace proposal. And hopefully Trump follows through and cuts him off of military aid, because without the United States, the Europeans can't keep their forever war going. They can't keep this battle up. They've committed economic harry-carry. They have self-deleted themselves economically in the prosecution of this war and cutting themselves off from Russian energy. They've made things exponentially worse for the European people, all because they don't want to either reckon with the reality that their time has come and gone and adjust and adapt and be mobile. They can still survive. And to bring it all back together, I mean, when it comes to Canada, we are saddling ourselves through Mark Carney and through our current leadership at all provincial levels, we are saddling ourselves to this old thinking, this order that's passing away. Even if you don't like Donald Trump, even if you don't like the Don Rowe Doctrine, which we'll get into, which is that I talked about this before he was elected, that what was coming was a new Monroe Doctrine, a focus on this hemisphere. And it's the only game in town that can actually secure a peaceful existence for my children and maybe my grandchildren, if I'm lucky enough to have them, at the very least for the rest of my life, is this acknowledgement that the empire building and U.S. hegemony has not led to good results for the American people and for the world, and that a recognition of the rise of these other nations and these other orders is necessary for the survival of the world. For some reason, Canadians just don't see it yet. Can't understand the change. And I guess that's why I make videos every day, or if not every day, I make videos on a consistent basis. I'm Frank Vaughn. If you like the work, please support it via the website. I'll see you in the next one.